Another voice is from Marcus Borg. The modern meaning of believe is very different from its meanings from Christian antiquity until the 17th century. In English, prior to about 1600, the verb believe always had a person as its direct object, not a statement. It did not mean believing that a statement is true with varying degrees of certainty, but more like what we mean when we say to somebody, "I believe in you." Note the difference the preposition makes. To believe in somebody is not the same as believing somebody. The latter refers to believing that what the person has said is true, that his or her statements are true. But "I believe in you," meaning having confidence in a person, trusting that person. In a Christian context, it means having confidence in God and Jesus, trusting God and Jesus. The meaning of believe prior to about 1600 includes more. It comes from the Old English "be lof," which means to hold dear. The similarity to modern English word "beloved" is obvious. To believe means not only confidence and trust in a person, but also to hold that person dear, to belove that person. Believing and beloving were synonyms. Thus, until the 1600s, to believe in God and Jesus meant to belove God and Jesus. Think of the difference that this makes. To believe in God does not mean believing that a set of statements about God are true, but to belove God. To believe in Jesus does not mean to believe that a set of statements about him are true, but to belove Jesus.
I've been trying to start a new religion, and it isn't easy. But I keep whittling away at it. It'll be interesting to see if I can get any converts after today's sermon. It's a bit of a hard sell, and a question might be, well, what are the beliefs of your new religion? And my religion has no beliefs. There are no beliefs in my new religion. You don't have to believe anything. No beliefs whatsoever. However, you can believe whatever you want. If you do have beliefs, you're not excluded from my religion. You're not required to have any beliefs to be in my religion. Beliefs are not required. Having them does not exclude. Okay? So, for example, to be in my religion, you can believe that Jesus walked on water and turned water into wine. You can believe that if you want. Believing that does not exclude you from my religion. Now, if I had any members in my religion, some of the finest ones would believe that Jesus walked on water and turned water into wine. Some of my best members, if I had any, would believe that about Jesus. If I had any members in my new religion, some of the finest would be doubters about the water stories. Some would even say, "I don't believe he did either of those things." And they would be good enough to be members of my religion. In my religion, if I had one and had any members, you'd find people who believed Jesus walked on the water and turned water into wine, and people who didn't, both in the same religion, hanging out together, doing stuff, being friends. In my religion, beliefs are not forbidden items to discuss. The religion is not about not talking about beliefs. In my religion, people talk about beliefs a lot if they want to do so. Sometimes, in fact, often, people modify their beliefs because of their conversations with other members who have a different belief. Sometimes people are challenged by the beliefs or the lack of beliefs of others. In fact, there are times which it's downright uncomfortable to be members in a religion in which people believe different things and talk about it. In my religion, if I had one, and if anyone bothered to join, people can change their beliefs, and it's perfectly fine. They don't have to report to anyone or worry about they might get excommunicated. But in my religion, people are free to talk about how their beliefs have changed or in the process of changing, if indeed that's the case. Now, people might challenge me and say, "Well, I can go along so far, especially about beliefs that aren't that important. But what about the big ticket items? What about beliefs about the Bible or Jesus or God? Aren't there some things you just have to believe?" And my answer is, yes, in some religions there are beliefs about these things, and there are many religions who spend a great deal of time and energy defending a certain set of beliefs and trying to get other people to believe like they do. But in my religion, a religion without beliefs, a religion in which I have, so far, no members, there are no beliefs you have to have about anything, but you can believe anything, and you can change your beliefs about anything as you go along. Now, in the Christian religion, there are beliefs about many things. There are so many beliefs about different things and different ways about believing the same things that there are estimated to be 40,000 different Christian denominations in the world. And nearly all of these groups require their adherents to assent to some kind of system of beliefs, and some enforce this assent more rigorously than others. But in my religion, in which there are no members, but I am hoping to recruit, there is no requirement to assent to a system of beliefs or even to assent to one single belief. Beliefless. A beliefless religion. Now, some will say, I believe Jesus is the Son of God and rose from the dead and is the second person of the Trinity. And they are excellent members of my religion, if I had any members. Others will say, I think Jesus was a wise teacher and I like what he had to say and what he did, although I don't really believe all the theological claims. And they too are fine members, if I had members, of my religion. Some will say, the Bible is the Word of God. Not every story is accurate, but as a whole, it's God-inspired and communicates what we're to be and to do. And those are marvelous members of my religion. Many serve on committees, if I had them. Others will say, I think the Bible is a classic literary work and talks about what the people who wrote it believed about themselves and God. And those members are swell, and some of them even serve communion, if we served it. In my religion, there are people who will say, I believe in God. And there are people who will say, I don't believe in God. And they're both fine members, if I had members, in my religion. Sometimes those folks just won't leave it there, but will explore it further with each other. And they'll go on to say, well, I feel and believe that God is with me and loves me and God holds everything together for me. I can't explain it, but I believe it. And those are some of my finest members, if I had members. Others will say, I feel that the universe moves by a combination of natural law and chance, and I'm not sure that God has meaning in my understanding of the universe. And those, too, are some of my finest members, if I had any members. Now, the first might respond, but how do you account for it all? And how do you account for you and me and beauty and hope and daisies? I believe, trust, and sing to God because God brings me joy. And the second might say, well, how do you explain the harshness and coldness of so much of our existence, the meaningless suffering and the indifference? I prefer to think that life's a mixed bag and we make the best of it. And on they go, throughout the night, sharing perhaps a bottle of wine that reminds them both of a story in the gospel about Jesus that some might believe happened and others not. And it's a marvelous conversation. And both are members of my religion. If I had any members. Members of my religion believe all kinds of different things about even the big ticket items. None has to believe anything. None is excluded from believing or not believing anything. Now, another cool thing about my religion, if you'd like to sign up, although I don't have any forms, is that you can belong to another religion and belong to mine too. My religion's not exclusive. You can be a Methodist or a Jew or a Muslim or a Rastafarian or a Presbyterian, and you can be a member of my religion too. As far as whether or not your other religion will allow you to be a member of my religion, you have to bring that up with them. But from my point of view, you can join my religion and be a member of whatever else you like. Now, some might challenge me and say, your religion did not just arise out of nothing. It has a history. You talk about Jesus, and you talk about the Bible. That's Christian stuff. And my response is, yes, good observation. Yes, my religion is Christian-based. So probably it's more accurately a beliefless Christianity as opposed to a beliefless religion. It has roots. It has its own journey. And I don't know where it will end up. But it does draw from the long history of Christianity, but it doesn't insist on any beliefs along any stop along the way. It's a bit messy and unorganized in that way, but in my religion, I think it's a better option than being too orderly, organized, and certain. So not only does my religion draw from Christianity, but it also draws from other religions and from science and whatever else is out there. My religion also draws something specific from Christianity and other religions, and that is an ethic of love. A bit vague, I suppose. But it is primarily a trust that this religion can work. It requires a commitment to listen and to be honest and to treat others as we would like to be treated, which is no easy task when we really try it. A principle that most religions have some way of articulating. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, whose birthday we just celebrated, spoke of love a great deal. And in 1957, he preached a sermon entitled Loving Your Enemies at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And this is just one paragraph that I'd like to share with you from that great sermon. Martin Luther King. Now, there's a final reason, I think, that Jesus says love your enemies. It's this, that love has within it a redemptive power. And there is a power there that eventually transforms individuals. That's why Jesus says, love your enemies. Because if you hate your enemies, you have no way to redeem and to transform your enemies. But if you love your enemies, you'll discover that at the very root of love is the power of redemption. You just keep loving people and keep loving them even though they're mistreating you. Here's the person who is a neighbor, and this person is doing something wrong to you and all that. Just keep being friendly to that person. Keep loving them. Don't do anything to embarrass them. Just keep loving them, and they can't stand it too long. Oh, they react in many ways in the beginning. They react with bitterness because they're mad because you love them like that. They react with guilt feelings, and sometimes they'll hate you a little more at that transition period. But just keep loving them, and by the power of your love, they will break down under the load. That's love, you see. It is redemptive, and this is why Jesus says love. There's something about love that builds up and is creative. There's something about hate that tears down and is destructive. So love your enemies. That was Martin Luther King preaching about love in 1957, just about when it all began, the civil rights struggle. Love is not a belief. It's a way of being. Engaging with respect and being honest about the times we are not as respectful as we might have wished ourselves to be, and to give it another go, to love again. Love others, love ourselves. That's my new religion. It's a beliefless and beloveful Christianity. It's Christianity minus beliefs. I'm hoping to recruit people to my new religion this morning. And I don't have any forms or any classes to take. I don't have a list of members, and that's probably why it's hard keeping track of who's a member and who isn't. You don't have to confess anything. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to participate in any rituals. You don't even have to tell me you want to be a member. But you may want to think about it for a while. You don't want to jump into these things, joining new religions and so forth. A beliefless and a beloveful Christianity. Messy. Unpredictable, disorganized. I wonder if it'll catch on. Amen.